is the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Welcome to Agile Uprising. This is our podcast, next installment on Meta Frameworks. We've got a great show tonight. On the show, we have Andrew Leff, Andy Bacon, Mr. James Gifford, the illustrious Michael McCalla, and myself, the host, Jason Kuzak. And from an agenda perspective, we wanted to talk through some things, but I think that before we get into what meta frameworks are or are not, there's probably some important context to talk through. And Mike, you and Andy were having a conversation right before we started this podcast. And it probably could benefit our audience for you guys to continue that if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. So there's always been disputes on social media about my framework's better than your framework. My Agile's better than your Agile. Your framework's not Agile. But it seems like over the past, let's say, half a year, it's gotten considerably bad. And given the state of Agile is very far off from where the manifesto authors envisioned it, I think we have ourselves to blame a little bit. I mean, how can we embrace and sell, not sell, but promote Agile to people if we can't even agree within the community what Agile is? So I feel like there's a little bit of getting in our own way as far as promoting Agile. And I think it starts within the community.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. And one of the things we were talking about earlier is that it happens not only sort of at some of the scaling frameworks that have gotten a lot of press over the last couple of years, you know, safe is no good and less is the best, or dad, you know, is too convoluted. We also see it even at the sort of the basic level of, you know, Scrum versus Kanban. So I agree. It's something that's becoming a distraction for the community. Something that I think we really got to come together about and fix.
Well, I think the biggest irony is that all of these practices and frameworks that are out there, right, they're all based off of the same principles and values, right?
Yeah.
And we're all trying to achieve better business outcomes. So, you know, the only thing different here is the practices. Every organization being unique, they should be able to find that there's a lot of great practices out there that have been given to us by some really smart thought leaders. Well, there's no reason why we can't pick and choose until we find the one that works for us.
Right. And all those practices have worked in some context in somebody's organization. They might not work in everybody's organization or in every context, but they've worked somewhere. I mean, that's why they've become, you know, a well-known practice in the community.
What's your Geoff? I know you have some thoughts about this. You've tweeted and shared some of your opinions. What's your thoughts?
I mean, ultimately, you know, going through the Agile Manifesto project is, you know, it's been kind of eye opening, and you know, at the heart of the manifesto for Agile software development, you know, we are uncovering better ways of developing software by doing it and helping others do it. You know, whenever we're ultimately watching these thought leaders go after each other on the internet, I mean, we're not focusing on what they're doing or what they've brought to the table of, you know, their version of better ways to deliver software. You know, ultimately talking to a few of these guys, I mean, that's why they walked away for Agile for some time. Is that some of the original signers of the Agile Manifesto actually have walked away from the industry because of what Agile has become today, with the scaling framework wars of, you know, or even watching David Anderson go at Ken Schwaber and Sutherland. I mean, ultimately, there is value in every single one of these frameworks, and being able to be exposed to the learning consortium that Steve Denning is ultimately putting together, and he's bringing in industry people from all kinds of industry to talk about Agile and the way that they grow their business. We're not living up to just the first sentence of the Agile Manifesto with the state of Agile as it is. today, and it's really disheartening. And that's what's spurred a lot of the tweets that I've put out about, you know, Waterfall is better than Agile because its practitioners don't bitch at each other on Twitter, and a couple other things. I mean, ultimately, you know, Agile has become individuals interacting about framework or interacting about process and tools instead of individuals and interactions over process and tools. So, you know, with the state of the union, and even Jeff Patton has put out a lot of work on the, or put out several tweets on this, and he's talking about the Agile buffet, the shaming that the Deloitte map got on Twitter in that one day was just insane. But when you realize the industry has become extremely complicated because we are working to uncover better ways of developing software. So if you take that Deloitte map, I mean, it starts to, and if you're, for the folks that are on there that don't know what Deloitte is a consulting company, and they have this giant subway map of all the 70 some practices out there that have become what Agile has become that Mike and Andy have kind of alluded to. Ultimately, that map ties into what Alistair is doing about getting back to the basics with the heart of Agile. It ties into what, you know, they're, you know, the guys at Industrial Logic are trying to promote with modern Agile, that we all continue to fight over what that means. And so hopefully, as we get through this discussion, we talk about meta frameworks, people are going to have an understanding of your organization is completely different. So let's find a set of practices that line up with the 12 principles and the four values. Let's actually get back to uncovering better ways of developing software. Or in this case, in this modern age, let's get back to finding better ways of doing marketing or developing products. It doesn't have to just be software anymore.
So James, you used the term meta frameworks quite a few times there. And I think before we go on any further, I think we should define that. Mr. Kuzak, I think I actually learned the term from you. Why don't you take that one?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I mean, to me, and I come from a data background. So when I started thinking about some of this stuff, I was thinking of it in the form of metadata, which is data about data. And if you break down that word meta, there's also like the term metacognition, which is thinking about what to think about. So to me, it was a natural fit, at least from my background, to say that, you know, a meta framework is essentially a framework of frameworks. It's, at least in layman's terms, do shit that works is kind of how I look at it. And I've been a little bit spoiled because some of my background was very rich in, you know, very well-practiced Scrum. So, you know, from a Scrum perspective, there were things that I was brought up on that I completely subscribed to. But then as I started to evolve and grow, there was so many other things that I started pulling into my engagements that seemed like they were a good fit for that company at that point in time. And I didn't want to be the person that always, you know, prescribed Scrum for something because that was the only thing I knew. So I started expanding at least my personal knowledge about all these other frameworks and trying to find best of breed ways to solve problems. So that to me, that's kind of where I got the term from. I'm not even sure if that's a good term to use from an industry perspective or if people even, if that resonates with people. I'm kind of curious because, you know, and I'll ask Andrew Left this question. Have you heard it called anything else, or is there any other notional definition of that you've seen through your recent travels, Andrew?
I haven't. And it's always sort of entered the conversation with a brand name. So it hasn't come to me in the meta framework sense, outside of just being called organic or, hey, we're homegrown or we're Scrumfall or whatever, some bastardized version of, you know, not working well. Yeah. And I think it's an interesting point, but I think we all come from backgrounds that have had some sort of grassroots upbringing within the organizations to some degree. I could be speaking out of term. I'll speak for myself. That's mostly where I've come from. So I find it interesting when you are going into a large organization that doesn't have good pockets of Scrum If we're going to say, you know, use anything, any sort of agile term, let's just say they don't have good scrum teams, or they're operating in, you know, 2 week waterfalls. How do you sort of introduce, without having a homegrown sort of conversation, that to implement some sort of framework for an organization that's tailored to them, that encompasses multiple things? Yeah. You know, you could pull in some aspects of SAFe, some aspects of LESS, some aspects of DAD, whatever it may be. It could be your own successes that you've had. How do you sort of start that conversation? Because it's a tough conversation to have. You know, if you go back to sort of the Kotter principles, you know, how do you create that climate for change? You know, how do you get engagement and enable an organization, and how do you implement the sustaining change?
That's why I'm asking that question too, Andrew, because like, I almost don't want to give it a name, because then when people, and Andy, this probably resonates a little bit with you, because you and I are on a similar engagement, we work very closely together. But the second someone hears one of those framework names, like they hear SAFe, and their eyes either light up or they get really angry.
Yep.
It's a very polarizing emotional state that people get into. And I'm afraid to even go down a path of calling it a name, because I don't want it to have that visceral emotion associated with it. I just want people to be able to look at a situation for what it is and say, let's be pragmatic. Let's do what works. Let's conduct a small experiment. Let's limit work in progress and see if we get somewhere. And I feel like if you call it a name, then you're lending yourself to what the rest of this community has done at times, which is you personalize it and then you want to defend it for why it works or why it's better than something else.
Right.
I feel like there's just already enough of that in this space right now.
Yeah, I agree with that, Jason. I think the other thing that I typically do is I just start with, instead of giving it a name and starting with the framework, I typically just start with, what are we trying to achieve here, right? What is the business outcome? Why are we doing Agile, right? And then let's find the practices, the tried and true practices that, you know, belong to a framework that someone created that work. And let's, like you said, have an experiment, measure, see if that's working, and then expect and adapt along the way. So in even like just staying away from that agile term and the frameworks, right? Just tell me what we're trying to achieve and let's be lean at the approach and experiment.
Right. I think having a clear understanding of kind of like what symptoms are you actually trying to address with whatever practices you're putting in place. You know, has to be clear to the organization that's doing the implementing. And lots of times with these frameworks, they say, well, we want to implement Scrum by the book, or we want to implement SAFe by the book, without a really good understanding of what the practices are and why the practices exist in the first place.
Yeah, but in fairness to some of this, at least some of those give context to what it could look like, right? So someone going in and talking about this stuff is great, but getting buy-in and actually getting someone to take that fearless leap is really hard. I mean, I don't necessarily encounter that embrace sort of thought process often, where you have somebody that's willing to say, hey, I'm listening to you and I'm ready to go all in. Let's do this. So by putting some of these scary, you know, diagrams in front of people in these big placemats, you know, that have a bunch of stuff on it, it gives them context as far as what it could look like. Now, whether that's the right way to do it or not, that we could debate that quite often. But
yeah, the other thing is, and you reminded me of something when you said that, it kind of gives people confidence that there could be an answer. You know, whether that's the right answer or not, lots of times people sort of feel helpless or forced and say, hey, you have to be agile, right? And their VP is coming and say, hey, you have to do this, you have to do that. It gives them an answer, right? It gives them something to hold on to, and gives them that sense of a little bit of confidence that, all right, well, maybe there is something out there that's going to work. So I think it's natural for people to grab onto it.
Well, I think the other thing that has been scary about this is that, and we've seen this through all the teams that we've coached, right? I mean, confirmation bias is a huge killer of, you know, many different things. And when you look for reasons why something will fail, you typically find it, right? So even within the coaching community, you have people that want to argue about how SAFe can't work, and then they, you know, spend all their time trying to pick it apart instead of trying to find merits why, you know, maybe that would work in a specific instance, or maybe there are some good things about it. And I think that if as a coaching community, we spent more time thinking about the positive things that all these frameworks bring to our clients, we'd be in a far better spot and there'd be less bickering and there'd be less, you know, proverbial measuring of, you know, my Agile is better than your Agile, because we would all be working toward a common goal, which is, I think, what the outcome, Andy, of your and Mikal's conversation earlier was really meant to be.
And you know what, Jason, that's a really good point, because it's almost that purist mentality where we all might be, as coaches, right, purists to sort of the evolution of change and adopting change, but also not beating someone over the head with a specific framework. You have to do Scrum. If you're not doing Scrum by the book, you're not doing Agile. Or, you know, you have to scale, you have to pick a scaling framework, and it has to be, you know, slice A or, you know, A, B, or C. It has to be this variety or it's not Agile and you're not scaling. So I think also taking the collective book of knowledge that everyone has had, you know, what successes and what failures they've experienced, and elaborating on that to really do right by their client, or at least introduce different thought processes, is an interesting sort of spin on it.
I think the frameworks left are really valuable in the beginning of any type of change initiative, right? So if you do Scrum, you could just, I would say, hey, let's do Scrum by the book for the first 3 months, right? And let's just, it helps actually drive that discipline, that mindset that's needed to kind of embrace Agile. But then from there, I think we can start to inspect and adapt and say, okay, what else works for us? And that's just really from the project management side of things. The truth is that no Scrum team is going to be a high performing team without XP practices, right? Most high performing teams will actually have visualize their work with a board, right? Probably have some WIP limits so they can drive things to done. So this idea of meta frameworks, of complementing these practices across the different frameworks, is happening today. I think any good practitioner is going to open their mind and want to learn other things and see what they can do to make their team better and make their organization better when you have to scale.
I think one of the things that I've seen is that people are doing things without even realizing that they're doing them. I mean, lots of teams say, oh, we use Scrum. But they say, okay, well, do you ever do any type of automated testing, or do you do pair programming? Like, oh yeah, we do those things too, without having any knowledge that they're XP practices. Same thing with Kanban, right? They might have a board with whatever they have on it. They may consciously or subconsciously be limiting their WIP and might have no idea that it's a Kanban practice. So I think there's a lot of stuff going on in the community that, you know, the practitioner community, we understand it, but the teams that are actually doing it out in the field may or may not be familiar with all the terminology that's associated with the frameworks themselves.
Yeah, Andy, I think as a coach, and I think Jason alluded to this early on, I don't necessarily put like a brand on it, right? I say, hey, we're going to do Scrum because everyone identifies with Scrum, right? Yep. But you're absolutely right. The truth is that we're teaching well beyond Scrum. Yep. We're using Scrum as that project management framework maybe. But other than that, sure, we're always mixing in, as good coaches, as good practitioners, the things that we think will work for that. We should have a fairly large toolbox. And that's kind of how I see this whole meta frameworks term. As a coach, you know, I've studied these frameworks. I understand these practices. I've experimented with them. Mm-hmm. And I try to find that blend of practices that is going to work for that specific team and for that specific organization, based off of their outcomes.
But right? It goes beyond the team though. And I guess that's sort of the rub for me, is it's not just a team, you know, how do you optimize not only a team, but an organization? So when we're talking about optimization, sure, you can optimize that team, but you can create sort of this team environment to run in Scrum framework that just, you know, is throwaway, because you can't optimize across the organization. You're not going to take that possibly and be able to replicate that, because let's say a team has a different need. I understand the fundamentals are there and you're sort of developing that muscle memory, but why, you know, in sort of Lou, why even bother calling it Scrum then? Let's just call it optimization. How do we optimize the team and create sort of practices within the team to be able to replicate in other areas, maybe not completely duplicate, but that can also translate up into the business because the business needs to be optimized as well.
And I totally agree with that, Andrew. And this kind of goes back to, I mean, I'm experiencing it right now. And I know that you and Jason definitely experienced it when you guys were at that large financial institution. I mean, eventually at some point you guys got the development stack so efficient that they were outrunning the actual business. And because the business didn't understand or want to buy into that, you know, the agile mindset and the agile practices, ultimately you have a very high performing technology organization, but your business is lacking and you're not actually getting those outcomes that Mike is actually alluding to, you know, at the beginning of this podcast. So, you know, a lot of these frameworks and things like that don't actually get into practices to creating agile organizations that are able to, you know, focus on outcomes, focus on delivering actual value that is measurable, that they can get validated learning from and move forward. I mean, I'm watching it happen right now. We're literally teaching the business elements of the lean startup because they don't understand product development as well as they should. And that's one of their goals out of this whole third try at Agile is we need to understand how to actually deliver good products. So they're finally, the light bulb's finally gone on and said, hey, our development teams, even though they're running a bad version of Scrum, they need help with the technical practices from XP. We as a business need to understand the Agile mindset just as much. And what are we going to do from an Agile practices standpoint, or even where do we even start?
So that's a good point. So what have some of you guys experienced as far as, you know, whether you've conducted any sort of experiments at the organizations that you're working in, or, you know, strategies that you've put forth to try and sort of help promote and push that agenda, let's say, or meta framework, if we want to tie it back into the podcast. Jason, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm pondering how to answer that question because it's a good one. I mean, I think if I go back to the summertime at a current client, I had a team that really was unable to do Scrum for many different reasons. And really for them, Kanban was a far better answer because it was lighter weight. It allowed them a little more flexibility. They viewed it as an easier, more simplistic model. And that kind of comes into the confirmation bias, a point I was trying to make with people have this preconceived notion that Scrum sometimes can be heavy with all their ceremonies and that there's a lot of wasted time and bookended within an iteration. So in that case, you know, I refrained from really calling it Scrum. I tried to refrain from calling it Kanban. I just called it more agile than we were yesterday. And I tried to look to Mike's point, I tried to look through those principles and say, which of the principles are going to be the biggest hit for this team right now? And of the toolkit that I possess, how am I going to pull things from there? And how can I conduct experiments to show them that, you know, they start all their work on day one and they finish all their work on day 12. But there is no iteration. There is no increment through that sprint. It's everything gets started. Everyone works on everything at the same time. And then everyone finishes everything at the same time. So in that case, like to me, it wasn't really using a meta framework as much as it was, let me pull a principle out and let me say, you know, we're going to try to limit work in progress. And we're going to try to create some sub teams within this team that are going to work on just the completion of these stories with quality as a first step. If I called it something, they would have latched on to that and then tried to research it about why it wouldn't work or how it was too heavy or how it was this or that. And in my mind, you know, if you don't give it a name and you just give them a practice to go after, it actually simplifies the coaching a bit. And it keeps it less academic and more practical. And I feel like that's really the first step in trying to get toward a more agile environment, if you will. Because it can't all be all Kanban or all Scrum or dad every day, all day. It just can't be those things. Maybe for some organizations that stuff works, but I have not found a single one where cookie cutter prescriptive framework Agile is the only answer that works. I just haven't seen it.
How about you, Andy?
So something Jason just said sort of caught my interest, and you said sort of limiting WIP, right? And I was thinking, okay, well, is that an Agile Manifesto thing? And it's really not, right? It's a Kanban principle. And so part of, I think, the challenge is even sort of linking these things back to principles is that even that is not a simple thing, because as the community has grown over the past 20 years or so, you see new values and principles emerging. So I just took a SAFE class, and in the SAFE class, there's 9 principles, right? And limiting WIP is one of them. And a lot of them can relate directly back to the manifesto, but some of them are a little bit different. And I took some stuff out of that class that sort of added to my toolkit. So part of the challenge, I think, of being a good Agile practitioner is not only keeping up to date on the practices and the frameworks that exist, but even like the depth of thinking around at, from a value and a principle level.
So agreed. And I think that it's all, how do we keep sharpening the axe without, you know, chopping everyone's head off every time we learn something new.
Right.
So it's a tough thing to do, because as practitioners in the industry and coaches, you constantly want to push, you know, get people, you know, are we teaching Agile or are we teaching people kind of premise?
Right.
So it's a tough balance. It's a tough balance. Mike, have you, what, you know, you've been doing this a while, sort of, where have you sort of veered off and created some different sort of strategies going forward to try and help promote doing things maybe, you know, not just in the Scrum fashion?
So typically, the engagement I have right now is a really good example. So an organization that was a traditional project management waterfall organization, really doing a full-blown transformation to Agile, right? What that means was, yeah, we're going to have a couple Scrum teams, and, you know, on the operations side, we'll have Kanban teams. But the approach that I've had is, let's not scale until we have to. Right. And then let's get these teams starting with Scrum. We'll introduce some new practices along the way. Obviously XP, visualizing work, WIP limits, which to me are just kind of inevitable. And then kind of just figuring out, learning the organization, letting it come to you, and then looking at that toolbox to see, okay, this might work here. Right. And experimenting with that, and not necessarily going full blown scaling right away. We've tried to stay away from that so we can kind of find our way instead of introducing this big scaled framework and then having to kind of peel it back. We're just trying to actually adopt the most light, let's just say a very lightweight scaling approach. And a lot of those concepts might come from SAFE, might come from LESS. You know, we're introducing a chief product owner ourselves. And that was just something in the toolbox, and it was something that fit for them. So I guess to answer your question, Leth, I just try to kind of let it come to us, kind of come to me as the coach, as the enterprise coach, and then just experiment, giving the culture, you know, kind of trying to get a feel for leadership, what they want to achieve, the type of culture of the organization, and just kind of taking a first stab at it, measuring the results, and then just inspecting and adapting along the way.
So is there a point in time where, and this is a question to anyone, that is a right time to start thinking about scaling, or should we always be thinking about it? Should we always have, you know, start to thread in a little bit of that sort of premise that this scaling, or, you know, bigger framework or different framework or whatever we want to call it, meta framework, has to come into play at some point? Do we start to sprinkle that and pollinate it, or, you know, how do you know when that tipping point is?
I think just my opinion is, in an enterprise where you have, you know, a matrix environment, or historically had a matrix environment, the whole scaling thing with like infrastructure, operations, security, all those sort of things are pretty much inevitable, right? But not necessarily introducing a ton of process around that, right? So, hey, one of the approaches that we've used is that role wave planning, where we have, let's say, an infrastructure person assigned to, let's say, 2 teams. And they show up, you know, maybe once every 2 weeks, in a kind of a large scale planning event, but it's kind of lightweight. and just talking about the requirements that are coming up from an infrastructure standpoint. So not necessarily introducing any type of hardcore framework, but just kind of like I think Gifford, you've talked about this, using a concept like roll wave planning to solve some of those scaling issues without introducing like the big framework.
Yeah, and ultimately, at the engagement I'm at, we ultimately had to choose a scaling framework to get overall enterprise buy-in. But at the same time, you know, we basically padded that out with, you know, rolling wave planning for how we address prioritization, measurement of business outcomes. So are these top priorities of the business actually obtaining value in the organization that we had intended? Should we continue to fund them? I mean, I'm kind of fortunate to the point where we've you know, educated them enough to get to funding basically products instead of and teams as opposed to project-based work. I mean, we've spent the better part of the last 6 months flipping the organization from projects to value funding, which is actually started a better conversation with the business. But we use that rolling wave planning, which isn't really in any of the frameworks, but it's a cadence planning framework that, you know, helps the organization imply WIP, but you can find that in some of the portfolio management practices that SAFE does with the big room planning and the program increment planning. This was just another practice that, you know, ultimately another scaling framework has, but because the organization and the leadership don't necessarily agree with SAFE's practices, we were able to go out to quarterly rolling wave planning and bring that in. You don't necessarily need to do it on a quarterly increment. That's just what's working for this organization. When Andrew and I, at the last client we were at, we found that we brought in a piece of PI planning from SAFE, which is Scaled Agile Framework. We brought that in, and instead of doing 3 months, we planned for an increment of 6 weeks because we needed it for some of the lean UX stuff that we were doing, as well as, client, like basically taking it to the client and doing field testing. So, you know, it is all about context. It is all about pulling from those practices. Ultimately, we're working in an organization that had to pull in dad just to get the senior leadership buy-in. And we've packed in a whole bunch more other practices in the inception process. We're really focusing on the lean startup and figuring out, you know, how are we going to build, measure, learn over a quarter. It's not as fast as, you know, a startup would want to focus on it. But for a large enterprise, it's that mindset shift that they needed to actually start to, bring in more holistic agility to the overall organization.
Yeah. So Andrew, it's a good question. I think that my 20-second answer is, I don't look to scale at first, but I look for touch points across teams where I should be aware of some of those things. But to me, because football season is about to end, I'll use a football example. To me, teams have to be able to block and tackle before I implement some exotic blitz package, right? Because them knowing how to go do something that's maybe at a different level of what their experience maybe allows is not a good thing for those folks because they don't know the basics of what they're supposed to do, right? We can talk all day about sustainable pace, but if they're not delivering at a sustainable pace or they don't feel like the pace is sustainable, then why would we scale that? And that's at least how I feel about it. I feel like as a coach, you have to be aware of some of those things and you have to help direct that energy. But at the same time, it can't be right out of the gate, day one, hey, welcome to scaling, folks. We're implementing this new framework, and this is how it's going to work.
100% agree.
So that sort of falls in line with sort of the, you know, failing or learning faster as far as saying, you know, we're an enterprise organization. We know we're going to hit sort of security. We know we're going to hit, you know, infrastructure issues. We know we're going to hit, you know, compliance, regulatory, whatever it may be, you know, because these teams aren't talking today. I always find it funny that people are like, oh, well, you know, we need to do this, this, and this, and blah, 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 but we're going agile, and we can't do that now. Well, how do you do it today? You know, you're doing some version of something today. So is that sort of, when we talk about going back to basics, blocking and tackling, do we allow those teams to learn? Is that part of that learning package where you're literally saying, okay, we're going to learn these basics. You're going to hit the, we know we're going to, you're going to hit these roadblocks. I'm not going to tell you though. You're going to learn this and you're going to have to, you know, these are the next, this is the next step. Does that sort of kick off that tipping point at that point?
I'm going to pass this to Andy Bacon in just a second. I mean, I think there's a level, trickery is probably the wrong word, but do I lead teams down a path that I know will create some provocative response? Yeah, of course I do. I do that just for my own amusement sometimes. I also do that just to see if they're paying attention, if they're going to push back on some things. But at the same time, you know, like, and Andy, this is why I want to throw it to you, because we had a conversation with some business folks probably early fall, where, you know, we were talking through not wanting to change their process until we could consume it and see what it was. Right. And that resonated with them. I mean, would you agree with that statement, Andy?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a tough thing. You know, you have to call it sort of binary. I mean, you either do it or you don't, can be tough. I mean, on one side, you can make a really strong argument for sort of gradually sort of getting things going, teaching teams how to block and tackle before you get them into some more complicated realities. The downside with that is that they're in their complicated reality now, because the teams don't live in isolation now. They have to interact with people from security, from operations, from various parts of the business, for example. So the flip side is to say, well, you know, we're just going to throw everybody into it, and we're going to give everybody a common taxonomy and a common way to work. And that's going to result in a better sort of way of working that's going to optimize the larger organization more so than if we did things piecemeal. And I think the reality of it is, either way, I mean, I think they can both be effective. I think the challenges you run into are different. You know, if you piecemeal things, you're going to run into the reality of that the organization is complex, and so that you're going to run into roadblocks every once in a while. Flip that along with everybody, throw everybody in at the same time, then you're going to run into the complexity of, like, everybody's running around trying to behave a different way, and they have no idea what they're doing, right? So it's going to be hard either which way you do it. But I mean, either way, I think that a key part of it is just being realistic about the pace at which the change is going to happen in the organization, and having a rock solid mechanism to capture feedback and how things are going, and like creating a really comfortable sense that, hey, this is going to be hard, and having leadership on board enabling that comfort. You know, that's where I've seen things fall apart, when you have a leadership team in place that expects the organization to turn on a dime, and they don't, and then all of a sudden it's Agile's fault, right? That's where things sort of fall down, in my opinion.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think part of that, from my perspective, is that if you talk through those touch points, and whether it's a sprint team, whether it's an infrastructure team, whether it's a business team, whether it's compliance, mm-hmm. whatever those touch points, and people say, well, how are we supposed to include compliance in this discussion? You go, oh, did you give those guys a call? Where do they say? We didn't really think about that. Well, great. Then that's step one, right? I mean, it might just be creating that ability to have a conversation with somebody else. I find that some of the business folks, though, in many cases, already have those relationships. And right. What they're doing right now is effective. They just have to make some small changes to how they look at some of these problems. And instead of thinking through it of the problems of yesteryear of, I have to spend $20 million because that's my budget, that's my allowance, and if I don't spend it, it's gone. Mm-hmm. I think that if you can get them focused in on, well, let's just talk about the important stuff that you have to deliver for the first quarter, right? And that kind of goes back to McCall and Gifford talking through the rolling wave planning. Like, that might be a very effective small change you can make for these folks, because they've been doing everything else pretty effectively, right? And I feel like that resonates more than coming in with, here's the new game plan, right? It fits on an 800-page book. Right. It must be followed to the letter of the law for it to work. That, to me, overwhelms folks. And they lose faith that how is this going to be better than what we were doing before?
Yeah, one of the key things, I think the risk of doing that, is that when you go in and say, we're changing everything. You presume that what people were doing in the past was not working, which is basically telling people you had no clue what you were, you had no clue what you were doing. So people are automatically going to sort of generally pull back and be like, oh, what does this guy know, right? So there's a huge risk in doing that. I mean, and there's lots of nuance and lots of sort of general change management stuff that you have to cover up front. But that's certainly a risk. And I have to say it's completely reasonable to have that reaction.
Yeah, the one thing that you guys said that resonated with me, I think you might have said it, Kuzak, was a lot of times these scaling frameworks try to solve problems that the organization might not even have, right? So you mentioned the example of the business people having relationships and kind of already understanding how to navigate the landscape of the organization and satisfy the requirements of the different business units. So, you know, that's kind of the approach that I've been is I'm not necessarily going to try to solve a problem that doesn't present itself, right? So when the problem presents itself, let's try to solve it within this one team and then learn from that and say, okay, this is working with one team, right? And hey, we have 15 teams, so we only have one operations department, so we got to kind of standardize this, right? And having those conversations about what does that process look like? Because this is going to present a constraint to the teams. So we need to try to find that optimization that Andrew was talking about. Right? And what does that process look like? And how can all these teams interact? And what type of standards can we adopt? Oh, by the way, subject to change based off of feedback. So I don't necessarily try to solve problems I don't have. But when they present themselves, and I know it's a problem, going to be a problem for every team, we do try to find a lightweight standard, God forbid I say the word, that will help all teams operate within the system, right?
But how do you go about doing that when, let's just say it's not just a team, let's say you're brought in to optimize a portfolio and you're like, you have a lot of teams and we can't impact delivery. We got to deliver on it March 2017. No, I don't want to hear that you can't. So I'm not going to really tell you how to do that. You just need to figure it out. And you know, just know that you can't impact my date.
Well, I think it goes back to what Kuzak was saying about the touch points, right? So when we find out that we do have a problem, and this is going to be a problem that spans many teams, let's try to experiment with all the teams, get them all on board, right? Get the buy-in, say, hey, what's going to work? Let's experiment with this, and then inspect and adapt along the way. So it's not necessarily isolated to the team. If it's an enterprise-wide problem or something that all teams are going to face, it's that moment where the teams kind of have to come together, the leadership, and say, all right, how are we going to solve this problem? What are we going to experiment with? Like you said, we need to deliver in March 2017. They have to. The problem is with Scrum is that it's very team-specific. The bigger problem out there is that these organizations are complex adaptive systems. And if one component is not operating in sync with all the others, it becomes a mess, right? So, and people have to realize that and have to embrace that and work together to optimize the system.
Agreed. But I think it goes back to something that Andy Bacon said around, you know, not going in there and sort of pointing everything out, because you sort of have to have smaller conversations, bite-sized pieces. But when you're posed with a deadline, you may not have the sort of ability to say, hey, you know, we're going to change this one thing and see how it goes. We're going to wait 2 weeks and then, you know, we'll reflect and inspect and adapt. And then we'll, you know, come out with some recommendations on one or two things we can change. Well, that's not fast enough, right? Andrew, we need to move faster.
The example I like to give in the case that you're giving, and I'll go back to my diner example you guys have heard before, good, faster, cheap, pick two, right? So in that instance, you want to go lightning fast. And so your options are, if you want to do it cheap, then it's probably not going to be that good. You're just going to have to deal with the quality, right? If you want it to be good, then it's not going to be cheap. And that means bringing coaches in to, let's say, pods of three teams. Right. And getting the coaches to align and actually scaling the coaching practice instead of necessarily scaling the team practices at that time. That's kind of how I would go solve that problem. Now, I know that that's not a perfect scenario for what you're describing. And in some cases, I think that we just have to push back and say, look, what you're asking for is impossible. Right? You want it to be perfect, predictable, and you want it to have excellence, and you want it with no time, right? I mean, some of those things just aren't reasonable.
No, and you completely sort of keyed in on what I was. Well, I was using that as an example, but I think you raised a great point. Talk about coaching practice or a coaching hub or a coaching center. Could that be a meta framework?
Yeah.
So it's that creativity of knowledge that you bring to the table, or as we bring to the table going into an organization, to create something that is for the organization that will create sustainability and the ability to form that, you know, powerful driving coalition for an organization within the organization, train people within the organization. It's interesting, as opposed to just saying, let's do safe, let's do less, let's do that. How do we take bits and pieces to create different things to sort of solve complex problems?
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, I think we should probably do a time check, gentlemen. Do we want to have some, like, a closing thought or a closing question to wrap up this podcast? We're at, what, 42 minutes? Is that correct? Something like that?
That is correct. So I think we touched on a lot of good points. I think, you know, we could dive into maybe for the next 5 minutes if everyone wants to, around, you know, does culture, I think we touched on it, you know, around the culture playing into the strategy and maturity as well. Do mature organizations have the ability to adopt different frameworks faster or with less resistance, or is it sort of the same challenge? Or does culture still play a part in that? And, you know, whether it be corporate politics, whatever it may be, around sort of how do you get promotion within sort of promoting that mindset? So just sort of tossing that out there. We can take it or leave it.
The one thing I'll add there, Lef, is, and I think I said this in the very beginning, culture and leadership are much stronger forces than any framework, right? So if you're going to bring in any framework without the support of leadership, first of all, and helping them drive the cultural change, I think you're setting yourself up for failure. Now, I think the one interesting thing here that Gifford brought up was he actually had to bring in a framework to get the executive sponsorship to buy into some of his ideas. And he's already said that he is experimenting within the boundaries of that framework. I think he said he's doing DAD with a little sprinkle of lean startup. You don't usually hear that, right? So he's already breaking the rules, but he had to label it. He had to put a label on it that everyone can identify with and go, oh yeah, they have a website. He wrote a book. Let's do it. Right. And it's, the nice thing about my current engagement is completely opposite. I have the benefit of coming through a fairly large, prominent consulting firm. And I guess they think that we know what we're talking about a lot of times. So I think they trust us that we don't have to have safe, right? We're just going to bring in kind of what works for them. So I think from a cultural and a leadership perspective, that Gifford nailed it. Like, he had to bring in a scaled framework, a label. And from my perspective, I did not. And I'm actually experimenting with practices across the board because I have the buy-in of leadership. And they're also having a very big, well, they're trying to drive a cultural change as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you have to make them eat their own dog food, right? Yeah. So if you're going to bring this in, you know, make them eat their own dog food and sort of show them a better path. But right. Sorry, Andy, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. I mean, one thing I was going to mention related to maturity is that just like we've been talking about sort of complex adaptive systems, and Mike, you mentioned it, it's important to realize that every team is a system. The software they're building is a system. The organization is a system. And every part sort of that thing is going to be sort of at a different place in terms of its maturity. You're going to have teams that you can go in and they may blow past sort of scrum by the book very, very quickly and make tweaks that get them off and running and make them go so much faster than they could with just scrum. You may have other teams that really need the structure of scrum to really just kind of keep going. And then when you think about scaling, you know, that organization, you're going to have to really kind of think about what type of practices do you put in at the organization or the program or portfolio level that are going to accommodate these different teams, which are going to be at different places in terms of their maturity. That's one of the things that I think that makes it so fascinating and so complex when you talk about scaling up to an organization level.
That's a good point. If you have anything you want to add?
I mean, ultimately, it is an adventure. I mean, and there is no great assessment that you can start at the beginning of any engagement and figure out how dysfunctional an organization is. I mean, the times I wish, you know, we could map this to the Kinefin and figure out every organization that I went into and figure out a bundle of practices that ultimately work. But I mean, as we kind of hit on through the course of this podcast, I mean, you need teams doing good foundational work before you scale up. There is a smorgasbord of agile practices out there that solve a plethora of problems. So finding the right mix of coaches that are, you know, that utility infielder, you want to go find a specialist. You want to find that utility infielder that's going to be able to look at your organizational problems and figure out what's going to work and when you need to do it. I mean, ultimately, if you go back to, like, you know, Andy Hunt is with growth and that new method that he's put out. I mean, he's ultimately talking about building good, solid foundations, good hygiene, being able to have a great pipeline in practice or in place so that you can continuously deliver, continuously integrate, whatever that means to your organization. Without a lot of these foundations, it doesn't mean it doesn't matter. Your agile isn't going to scale up. And then once you have delivering teams with a good build pipeline, things like those fundamental practices, as Jason alluded to with his football analogy, until you can go in and figure out a lot of that, it doesn't make sense to scale. And if your organization needs to buy a scaling framework and deploy it, you got to figure out within that bounds, what can I experiment with? I mean, in that engagement that I'm in, we're literally bringing in the lean startup, disciplined agile delivery, bits of less, bits of safe. I mean, we're literally pulling bits and pieces from everywhere and we're filling it into where the DAD framework has its four phases of inception, pipeline, construction, and transition. And because we're able to pull that in and experiment and figure out what's working for each area, we're working with the business to get them to deliver information to the teams, actually focusing on business outcomes, as Mike has alluded to. But we're also focusing on the actual delivery aspects of it so that we're getting quality out the end. I mean, all of these frameworks have they don't matter if you're not putting out a quality product at the end of the day. So, I mean, we've talked, you know, in a gigantic, you know, circle of really good information. But you have to be willing to experiment. You have to be willing to build a solid foundation. And you have to be able to have that conversation that says, hey, this is working for us. The teams aren't killed. They're working at a sustainable pace. We don't need to change this. We can live with this. What is, you know, it comes back to what is having that vision. An organization is just like software. It is just like any product. Where are we? You should start to treat your organization as a product. Where are we going to be in 2018? What is the vision for this organization? What is, you know, having leadership actually have a design for their organization for a year. I mean, you go back to eating your own dog food, having an agile vision for your organization for 2017 or 2018. Like, what does that look like and how are we going to get there? And let's experiment on the way.
Yeah. And
is where I want to kind of leave you.
Yeah. And that's, you sort of hit where I was thinking too, is just around, you know, going back to, I don't know, I've been utilizing the Kotter principles heavily in my engagement. So for me, it's all about creating that climate of change and what does that look like? And really, you know, how do you create that vision for change and then how do you communicate it? And then how do you empower it? So really sort of And then, you know, taking it to the next step around how do you build it, build on top of it, and then how do you make it stick, sort of principles. So to me, that's the critical path, in my opinion, around any sort of meta framework is getting that ecosystem running, and every piece of the puzzle has to sort of play a part in it when you start implementing any sort of scaled mindset, to me. So around having a complete ecosystem where leadership is just as much a part of the team as your scrum teams are, or your delivery, or whatever it may be. So that driving force has to be a presence, and they have to have a seat at the table, and they can't be the only seat at the table. Yeah. I'll kick it back to you, Cusack.
No, that's a great point, man. I think it's a closing thought from me. And maybe transformation's been the wrong word for a long time, because maybe evolution's a better one. And to me, like, being able to take these meta frameworks, just because some organization elects to go with safe with flavors of bad, doesn't mean that in 4 years that's what they're going to be doing. Maybe they decided that enterprise Kanban's a better fit for them because they have an awesome DevOps pipeline and they're able to promote code to production, you know, every 2 hours. Right, where safe would be extremely heavy with pomp and circumstance, and that wouldn't lend itself to that particular organization. So if we look at this as an evolution and we look at it from the team and business relationship as well, like, and we look at that and we say, if we start in this area and then we pull in flavors of, you know, engaging our business team, or if we start in the business and start engaging our teams maybe differently, you know, maybe that's how we have to frame some of these conversations going forward. Less about transforming teams and more about evolving them to do things a little bit better. So that's kind of where my head's at. Gentlemen, this was a great conversation. We could probably go on for 3 more hours. Although I'm not sure that we would get much listenership at that point. So, happy New Year to everybody. We should probably break open, a whole host of new topics heading into 2017. Maybe we come back and beat this one up with a couple other participants, or maybe with a specific focus on how to engage business people or a couple things like that. But tonight was awesome. Thank you guys for joining. Thank you for our audience for listening. And we'll see you next year.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
End scene.